The Fan on Demand. This is the Greg Brady Show, Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Third single off the 1984 album. I read about, by the way, a baby was smoking on that album cover. A baby was smoking. Not sure classic rock station should play any more songs from Van Halen's 1984. I heard about the Dire Straits, Money for Nothing being banned today. I'm not saying we didn't give it a second thought in the 80s when the other F word was described, you know, with the earring and the makeup. Yeah, buddy, that's his own hair. I got millions of those, but you don't want to hear like two of them, so I'll just leave it at the one. But you didn't even give it a second thought then. Now I understand it, and we all have grown up a little bit. I would love to be a fly on the wall at, because that particular you know, F-A-G-G-O-T word was used so much on the playground, wrongly so. I just don't know if kids use it now. Like, the radar will go up when, if I ever do yard duty at my kid's school and I hear it, because it was frequently in use. I can assure you, from 1979 or 80 on upwards. It's frequently in use at National Hockey League games between National Hockey League players and benches. Give a Google to Brian Trotche, yelling at Brian Bellows, if you will. I don't know that we're going to ban Brian Trotche from anything, but if you're wondering what I'm talking about, Money for Nothing has been banned by the Canadian Standard Broadcast Council. You're always worried about the CSBC. When I worked with Waters, he'd always joke, oh, there's a 613 calling. And sometimes it was. But unlike the FCC in the United States, anything can get... There's somebody sitting at home right now just waiting. Wait, one person. Waiting for me to slip up so they can call the CSBC and said, that guy said this thing about this person and I was offended. But I agree. You kind of cringe with Money for Nothing. I don't know what they could switch it to. I don't know when the last time Dire Straits played live. I don't even know if they still they do that song. They have to. You can't go see Dire Straits and not have them do Money for Nothing. It's like, I don't think they're embarrassed by it because it was a big hit. You got to hear... What are the five quintessential Dire Straits songs? You got your Money for Nothing, Walk of Life, Sultans of Swing, Industrial Disease, maybe, So Far Away, Right Across the River is great. They use that to Miami Vice in a great... I remember reading an interview once with John Parr. Lance, see if you can find the Man in Motion. I'm sorry, I'm throwing a bunch of different musical requests at you. John Parr said in an interview about a year and a half ago that he's sorry he ever made the St. Elmo's Fire theme, Man in Motion, because that's all he's known for. He wishes it had never happened. He wishes the record didn't exist. He wishes it was never put to a bunch of visuals involving Rob Lowe, Andrew McCarthy, Mayor Winningham, Ali Sheedy, Demi Moore, Judd Nelson, and Emilio Estevez. Thank you. And Andy McDowell was in it, but she wasn't really in the Brat Pack. Maybe she's just too good looking. I mean, it's not Mayor Winningham. And it makes you laugh because you think, yeah, that's too bad that that paid for your house and your cars and your perm and everything. Like, that sucked having that number one hit single for 2 years. You'd only have Naughty Naughty if you didn't have St. Elmo's Fire. All right. I was going to bring up Brett Favre's sister. You want a good mugshot? You need a good mugshot today. So, Brett Favre's sister, this guy, no, really, this guy, Brett Favre's sister, always in trouble, according to Mississippi police, arrested yesterday in a suburban meth lab, which you'll find the suburban meth labs are so snobby compared to the inner city meth labs. I mean, they've got Lance, they're jacked up. They don't reflect the real economy. They've got valet parking. You know, everybody's wearing like Hollister and Banana Republic. It's not Brett Favre's younger sister, Brandy. I was going Brandy or Brittany. I would not. Brittany Favre would make sense. Brandy Favre's even better. parents who've named your children Brandy or Brittany, please don't call the Canadian Standards Broadcast Council. Or please do, because this your complaint will be dismissed. Narcotics agents entered the lab while it was, quote, still cooking. You know how you walk in a restaurant, you just get that great, there's something like a great smell, like maybe it's pasta or... or you smell the how a glass of red wine smells. She was along with four others at the site of a meth lab. It was inside a condo unit in the heart of the normally quiet upscale community of Diamond Head, Mississippi. You know how things just shut down there around nine at night. I mean, it's you can't get any meth anywhere after about nine at night in Diamond Head, Mississippi. I looked this up on Wikipedia, so I know it's true. Meth has high potential for abuse and addiction, activating the psychological reward system. Maybe I'm leaving too cleanly. I don't know a single person who knows a single person who knows a single person who's done meth. That's about the only drug I could say that about. I don't know anybody who knows anybody who knows anybody. Following a period of heavy use, also known as binging, which typically lasts days or even weeks, a severe withdrawal system lasting up to 10 days can occur, primarily consisting of depression, fatigue, excessive sleeping, and an increased appetite. Well, two of those four don't sound so bad. Like, you're batting 500. You get to sleep a lot and you're hungry. I'm okay with both those things. I can do without the depression and the...
I'm so wasted!
And the fatigue, just a touch. So anyway, best of luck to, or maybe not, to Brandy Favre. If you find the story, if you want to see the story, email me, gregbrady@fan590.com. You won't see, there's pictures of five people, you won't see bigger burnouts ever in your life. I mean, I can't take any Mississippi election result, whether it's for president, Senate, or Congress, seriously ever again. I'm not sure I did. I don't, red state, blue state, I don't care what happens. I can't take any of it seriously anytime soon. I wanted to bring up the Capitals. I got time to talk about the Capitals. This theory's been floated out there a little bit, and I mentioned this with Doug on Hockey Central today about where they're at in terms of effort. And I don't think anyone's questioning the Capitals' effort, but are you incredibly skeptical that the Capitals can, quote-unquote, flip the switch and turn it on come playoff time? I don't think they're making many moves. I think this is the team they're going to the party with. There's not a Mika Kiprusoff trade in the works for Washington. They have no interest, zero interest in Martin Brodeur. I don't think anybody does. We have to get it out of our head that Brodeur wants to leave New Jersey. We have to get it out of our head that Lamoriello will trade him. And we certainly have to get it out of our head that he has any value whatsoever to a hockey club. He's not better than Varlamov or Neuvirth. Have you watched? Do you have time to sit down and watch the Devils' last four first-round playoff exits? He's outplayed game after game after game by Henrik Lundqvist. Last year, it's the Flyers' goaltending tandem. He can't play anymore. They have no interest in him. But I still look at Washington and think they're going in with Varlamov and Neuvirth. They're going in with the guys they got. Do you think Ovechkin's holding back before the playoffs? And if so, is that a good thing or is that a mistake? He looked like a tired, beaten guy at times in the Montreal series. And I am well aware of the points he got, but there were some games he was lights out good. Game two, remember they blew game two. They were leading in game two, I want to say by four goals. Might have been only three. But Ovechkin had a remarkable playoff stat-wise. I mean, he puts five in and assists on five. 10 points in seven games. Is this just Alex Ovechkin coming back to earth in your mind? Is there something wrong with him? Is there something wrong with his approach? What do you think? 416-870-0590, *590, and it's 888-666-0590. Again, it's awfully early to save yourself for the playoffs. You'll see teams sort of settle in, roll four lines more when March comes around, but 15 goals is shocking. Again, this is a guy whose NHL career, thank you, John Gruden, 52, 46, 65, 56, and 50. He's on pace for about 28 this year. Not even 30 goals for Alex Ovechkin. It's hard to see a scenario where if he was holding back, not being frustrated, not competing, not gunning it, not hammering guys into the boards. I mean, look at how he came out. He came out like a bull in the Winter Classic game. First two or three shifts, that's the Ovechkin. And yes, the Ovechkin that ended up just railroading Brian Campbell into the wall near the end of last season before the playoffs in that Sunday afternoon game when he was kicked out. Is there a problem with Ovechkin? Is he playing good hockey but just not getting the results? Is this all, can this all be related to a guy who is still, forgive the pun, hungover since the Olympics and since a first-round playoff defeat to the Montreal Canadiens? The Capitals made a lot of strategic mistakes last season. The President's Trophy thing was a huge blunder by the organization. Bruce Boudreau and George McPhee never would have wanted this to happen. That you parade around the President's Trophy on the ice at a game after you win it, you put it on the concourse, you let fans see it and take pictures with it in the middle of a season. The campaign is to win in the playoffs. It's not to have the best regular season record. And watch, don't be stunned or shocked when the Canucks totally ignore the President's Trophy when they win it. If they win it at home, don't even touch it. Take a little picture with it, stand behind it, move along. You'll want to remember that night. It's a special night, but at the same time, you're moving on. The Capitals don't seem to get those lessons here and there. And now the latest from Ted Leonsis is a hope. Maybe it's a plea. Maybe it's an ode. Make the playoffs. Leonsis was on a radio show in Washington this morning. Quote, "My goal is I just want to qualify for the playoffs. I don't think it matters how many points we finish with. I want us to enter the playoffs playing the right way and being healthy. I think our guys may be unconsciously pacing themselves a little bit." I do. I think that. It's hard not to like Leonsis. It's also hard to stomach the fact that he does what he does so constantly and consistently. There's a double standard in terms of ownership, questioning management, questioning players, questioning strategies, and questioning the head coach. He may not have as good a team as he did last year, and that makes no sense. Makes no sense given they've lost very little off the roster, and guys should be getting better. But Mike Green's not getting better, and Backstrom's having a slightly poorer season, still could end up with an 80-85 point season. And then there's Ovechkin, still an elite player. People pay to see him like they pay to see nobody else. We've done the Crosby-Ovechkin debate now is a hashed out, I don't know what else to think of, so I'll do it on the radio type topic, but Crosby's the better hockey player right now. Do you really think he's the more exciting hockey player? Big difference. Huge difference between the two. I don't know where it goes for Washington. I do know this. They better worry somewhat about positioning. I'm well aware the 7-8 teams played in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. That's not, you don't want to end up there on purpose. Let's put it that way. 416-870-0590, *590, it's 888-666-0590. Is there something wrong with Alex Ovechkin? In your mind, watching him as a hockey player, his approach, his play, his strategy, his work ethic. Again, this strikes me as a guy that it would leap off the page at you if he stopped working. It would be so obvious to the naked eye, whatever your hockey acumen is, when he's going through the motions, because he's not doing what Ovechkin does. Other guys who don't skate fast, you wouldn't know. Two guys, Hall of Famers, absolute Hall of Famers, Luke Robitaille and Brendan Shanahan, they didn't play quite the same way as Alex Ovechkin. So when maybe there was a night that they weren't quite as into it, it'd be harder to tell, and that's not questioning effort, ever. These are two of the elite left wingers in NHL history. When we come back, Buddy Nix will join us, general manager of the Buffalo Bills. Russell Martin, catcher for the New York Yankees, in town for a Canadian baseball event. We'll discuss that with him, as well as moving to the Bronx Bombers after a lot of flirtation with other teams in the AL East, including the Toronto Blue Jays. That's up next. This is the Greg Brady Show on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Now more of the Greg Brady Show on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
This is the Greg Brady Show. Russell Martin, Canadian-born catcher for the New York Yankees with Jorge Posada set to, you can't say finally, he's a damn good catcher and a field general, if you will. He'll end up playing a good amount of DH with Russell Martin backing the catcher catching position. The Buffalo Bills season, kind of a tale of two halves, really, with an 0-8 start and a 4-4 finish. And they obviously have work to do. They know that just as well as anybody. And joining us on the line, the general manager of said Bills is Buddy Nix. Buddy, thanks for doing this today. I appreciate it. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, happy to. I know you're enjoying the NFL playoffs, yet at the same time, you know how long it's been. It's been 11 years. You've been here for just over a year. You can't have a hunger or fan base wanting to get back to playoff activity, can you?
No, you're right. And I'm, you know, the playoffs are, you know, we always strive to get there, but we need to be competitive and be a threat to win each week first, and that's what we're working toward.
Consistency, we talk about a four and four finish. I'm guessing you saw more signs of the team you want to see in the last eight games than the first eight. Having said that, you guys lost some heartbreakers. Every team does, but especially the three back-to-back, the Baltimore, Kansas City, and then the Toronto game here, all games that could have easily been wins.
Yeah, and, you know, I think our schedule, the way it turned out, I believe six of the eight teams that are left, you know, we played, and that figures in. You never know how a team, when you schedule them, how they're going to be, but we caught them all at full strength, and actually, you know, we did make improvements, and we saw some good signs toward the second half of the season, but the last two games, we turned the ball over 13 times, and that hadn't been characteristic of our team, and once you do that, you know, you can lose to a good high school team to turn it over that many times.
I'm glad you brought that up because it's not an excuse, buddy, but it's an explanation. 16 of your games, 9 of them against playoff teams, obviously 4 in your own division. You had the Packers, you had the Bears, kind of both on the road given the Toronto factor, and you may still well have played every team that ends up in the championship games next weekend. So it wasn't exactly kind to you, but I know you're not using that as an excuse.
No, we're not. We got to compete with the best, and we know that, but It is a process that we're going through, and we understand that. And the only way we can get out of it is work our way out. And I think, again, I think we made progress with that. I think the guys we had, you know, played hard and competed. And, you know, it always looks like you're a million miles away, but I think we're a lot closer than people think.
Buddy Nix, our guest general manager of the Buffalo Bills. Does it make it harder in the AFC East? Again, you talk about the fan base, and you hear from people. The Patriots have won 15 straight against your franchise, and it's remarkable that they're – I mean, they just carved their way through the division the last three games of the year and even did it to the Jets, who they play this week. If it's the AFC West, if it's the NFC West, things are different. And I know you can only play the hand you're dealt, right?
Exactly. This is a tough division, and it always is, and it will be, and you just got to, you know, years ago when we went to San Diego, that was the toughest, and you couldn't beat Kansas City, you couldn't beat Oakland, you couldn't beat Denver, but all that changes, and you know, we just got to get to that level. You talk about beating, you know, losing 15 straight to the Patriots. A lot of people that play them lose to them.
Yeah.
And we got fired one time at Auburn after 5 years for not beating Alabama. And Coach Bryant was there during that time. I think he lost one game. So they had to fire everybody in the SEC, I guess.
Well, you'll laugh how it works because Peyton Manning, the knock on him coming out of college, I don't remind you coming out of Tennessee, was he went 0-4 against Florida. So, gee, you know, maybe he's not a big game quarterback. It's amazing how we judge things like that, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, we put it on one guy usually, but it's normally a team effort. And you just have to try to get to the point where you can compete with those guys. And if you do that, then you can usually beat the other people in the division.
I take it you want to draft. Do you use how you drafted in part in San Diego as a model for what you're trying to accomplish here, getting a Pro Bowler or two or three every single round? I mean, not a Pro Bowler right away, but guys that will evolve into that kind of stature.
Absolutely. You know, that's what we all strive for. And I, you know, we knew when we came here that we were going build through the draft, and that's a slow process, but if you hit on those guys, then they're the backbone of your team, and that's what we did there, and that's what we'd like to do here. We actually did that here, you know, in the 90s. We stayed competitive by drafting good, and that's what we got to do.
Buddy, next our guest, of course, Buffalo Bills general manager. I'm going to ask you about more about the draft in a second. I want to ask you about Trent Edwards. I guess I'd say no, even professional personal decision happens overnight, like a job change or a breakup or have a kid, don't have a kid. You don't just decide after week two that this guy is not your quarterback anymore. Did you want to give him at least that much more time against Miami and against Green Bay? Did you feel in preseason you were hesitant, or he was hesitant about how he could play as the number one guy for you?
You know, we did all of evaluation of him every day in OTAs and then preseason and in camp, and we wanted to see him play in live competition against good players, full speed, and see how he'd react. And after two games, it was our feeling that he'd be better off with another team, and we'd be better off going in another direction. So, but again, we didn't want to do that until we actually saw him play against competition after having been coached by our people and Coach Gailey. We thought that was giving him a fair chance, and that's what we did.
And what you found with Ryan Fitzpatrick was a great chemistry, wasn't it, with Steve Johnson? Not many people would have him labeled for 82 catches, a 1,000-yard season up with all those great Bills receivers of the past, like Lofton and Reed, that have done that. What did you see early on from those two that made you think, yes, they're in sync, they can count on each other, that they can rely on each other, and they can pick each other up when one's not going 100%?
You know, well, I do think that chemistry is important, but I think Steve Johnson's a good receiver, and I think he's got a knack for getting open. He hadn't had many opportunities here, and if you bring in guys or you keep guys like a T.O., and that was a good move at the time, but it pushes guys like Steve Johnson back and don't give them a chance to develop. So The potential was always there for Steve. It was just a matter of getting on the field and having a quarterback that could get the ball to him. And I think he's got the potential to do that every year.
How would you evaluate C.J. Spiller's year? And did he end up having enough time? And you were rolling with Fred Jackson as he did the year before. Did you get enough time to fully evaluate what Spiller is? Or like anything else, buddy, it's a work in progress. Any rookie is.
Yeah, and it's typical, really. But to be honest with you, he didn't have the kind of year, I guess, that fans wanted him to have. They tend to figure that if a guy's drafted in the top 10, he's supposed to be in the Pro Bowl as a rookie, and it just don't work that way. He's exactly what we thought he was. He's having to learn the speed and the caliber of competition he has to face every Sunday. But CJ is a guy that is more obviously than a running back. He can play slot receiver. He's having to learn to run routes. He got great hands and excellent speed. He's a good return guy. So all those things he's learning on the job. And at Clemson, he ran by guys. They zone blocked, and he'd hit the seam and run off with it. And, you know, that don't work that way here. You have to create things on your own. And he's learning that, and I got no question that he'll be an outstanding player for a long time.
Yeah, a lot of potential. It's a standard cliche question, buddy, on drafts, so I apologize for it in advance. You pick third overall. Do you draft the best player that's there, or do you have to draft for a positional need? And if it's a positional need, where do you look?
You know, we're not going to draft for a positional need. It's obvious when you pick in third that you're not real good unless you traded for it. So
yes,
that we can get help in any area. And for anybody, you know, any speculation or mock drafts that got us picking this or that, they don't know, I promise you. And if I knew, I wouldn't tell it. So
yep.
I'm just going to we'll let it play out, do our homework. And the guy there that can make the biggest impact for us is a guy we'll take.
Andrew Luck staying in school does affect that you know, very top half for Carolina, for Denver, for you, even Cincinnati. How do you think it impacts things? Are you quite certain that's where Carolina would have gone had they had the number one pick? Would it have been a no-brainer for the Panthers?
You know, you would think that, but with they getting a new coach, I mean, he's a defensive guy. I was with him at San Diego, and who knows how he'll look at it. I don't think anybody can sit back and say that it's a sure thing that Carolina would have taken Luck. I mean, you don't know that. All it does with Luck not coming out is take one guy out of the mix. It just moves everybody up, and a month from now, they'll forget about Luck. He's not in it, and you quit talking about him, and we'll talk about the guys that are there.
Some of the free agents you've got, people have mentioned Whitner. They've mentioned other guys. Still have calls to make on them. You obviously do, because it depends. You're always looking for an upgrade in any position, whether you're 4-12 or 12-4. You got to make the team better, regardless of personality.
Every class you bring in should be better than the one before. That's your goal, and that's what we try to do. And as far as we want to keep our own players. We don't want guys going off and playing against us and playing in the league. You want the good players to stay here. We're going to try to keep them all. We're going to try to keep them at the right value. And, that's about the only discussion I'd do about free agents.
Most teams are certainly talking about the notion of a rookie salary cap. You've had to do this, and you've drafted top-end rookies for the San Diego Chargers, and you know how things get slotted. Other sports seem to have thrived on it. The NHL has it. Major League Baseball has it. Is it a necessary evil, buddy? Is it just plain necessary to get the economics of the league in structure where, as good as they are, a Matt Stafford or a number one overall pick or Sam Bradford isn't the fourth or fifth highest paid quarterback ahead of guys who've won playoff games?
You know, I'm a firm believer that you get paid for what you do, not what you might do. And I don't know if that answers your question, but I think it's common sense that those guys get paid good, but you pay the guys that produce, and that's the way it should be.
Yep, can't disagree. Buddy, thanks so much for the time today. All the best in the offseason and getting set for April. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Enjoyed it.
There's Buddy Nix, general manager of the Buffalo Bills. They've got calls to make, certainly, on guys that, they're well-known names to Buffalo fans, but it's frustrating after points in time with Dante Whitner. And I know Puzlesny's a fan favorite, but you pay Puzlesny to have more than two sacks. Even from his position, you do. It's not the best thing in the world sometimes to lead your team in tackles when you're a linebacker, because that means you're not getting tackles up front. It often happens that way, but not to have 103. And it's far from being on him. He's a good player coming out of Penn State. The Bills have simply not done well enough with first-round and second-round picks. And you hear him say right there, C.J. Spiller was not, to go Denny Green, he was not who they thought he was right now in terms of his evaluation. I wish I'd had time. We ran out of time, but I wish we'd had time to ask him about Marshawn Lynch. But there's only so much you can say. There were other teams that couldn't believe Lynch went for only a fourth-round pick at the end of the day. But he wouldn't have gone for any more than the third. But you watch that touchdown on the weekend and understand this. Marshawn Lynch wasn't doing that all season long. Marshawn Lynch was not pushing off six, seven guys to get to the end zone. That was, I don't know that we'll see another run like that, but that's the guy that was drafted out of Cal. That's the guy that ran for 1,300 yards for the Bills' his rookie season. But he was, I don't want to say an ignored guy in Seattle. They needed him. Green Bay needed him. New Orleans ended up needing him when you look at it. But he didn't have a 100-yard game all year. Was 24 carries, 89 yards. That's not a great percentage when the Seahawks just have given up on running the ball in all too many games where they've been getting laced. But they were able to do it on the weekend, and boy, was it impactful. When we come back, Russell Martin joins us, catcher for the New York Yankees. This is Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
Make your friends weep with envy. Win wicked prizes inside the fan club. Join today at fan590.com. Now more of the Greg Brady Show on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Lance is playing a Townsend composed tune because he can, and because we mentioned him earlier. Hopefully that one person's still okay with that. Bob McCown's out. Jeff Blair is in. Primetime Sports is next. Very excited of our next guest on. Huge event this Saturday at the Northern Lights Ballroom at the Renaissance Hotel at the Rogers Center. A place that this gentleman will frequent a little more often on the road, though, as a member of the New York Yankees. He's a two-time All-Star and one of the additions in the offseason for Joe Girardi and the Yankees. He is Russell Martin. Russell, it's great to have you on the program. How are you?
Good, good. How are you guys?
Very, very good, thanks. Congratulations on the deal and being a Yankee. Are you as excited as anybody, I suppose, to get down to Tampa and get things going?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I haven't played since August when I got hurt last year, and, you know, I'm finally starting to get that itch to get it going again.
Well, and not just that, but you got such a good taste of the postseason, didn't you, in 09 with where the Dodgers were at and an emotional series with the Phillies. And it's nice to go to an organization where there's pressure, but that's nice to go to an organization where that's not just the expectation, but it's get there and you have to win all three rounds or the season's a disappointment.
Yeah, well, definitely. I'm with a team that the expectations couldn't get any higher, but, you know, I like the pressure, you know. It's you know, it just makes you feel more alive. It's really what you play for. When you're playing, all you want to do, really. I mean, as a kid growing up, you just dream of getting to the World Series and playing in the postseason and playing at that high intensity. And, you know, you can't really pick a better organization to play for, you know, than the Yankees to try and get to that point.
Now, are we accurate? It's the understanding that you're going to be doing the majority of the catching. They've talked about Jorge Posada, DH, or do you just think Girardi works all that out? You're a Yankee, and you've got some versatility, and you've got some utility because you've played other spots before and can obviously DH. Does it matter until you get there?
I mean, at this point, you know, they've told me that, you know, I'm going to be the starter and the number one guy, but... Mm-hmm. You know, there's nothing for me. I'm not taking it as a guarantee, and I never want to play like, you know, I have anything guaranteed. You know, I want to play like I have something to prove, and now, I mean, now I do. You know, I'm going to a new organization. It's my first time going to somewhere new. I was drafted by the Dodgers. I've been with the Dodgers since 2002, and you know, obviously there's still question marks out there. People are still wondering with the injury and stuff. So I'm gonna have to go out there and prove, you know, and prove what I can do again.
Russell Martin's our guest from the New York Yankees, longtime L.A. Dodger, and, of course, Canadian-born and a two-time All-Star. Do you think catching in the American League is any different? Have you kind of, you know, felt it out a little bit about that, given the pitchers, their one responsibility is to be out there. They don't have to worry about hitting. There's not as many situational changes and the double switch and pinch hitting. They can just, you know, guys like CC and guys like A.J. Burnett can just do what they do and work with you.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's a little bit less strategy involved, you know, because the pitcher doesn't get the hit. But that also makes it, you know, makes it tougher on the pitchers. You know, they don't have that almost that free out they have, you know, after the first six innings, you know, you get to a certain spot, you can pitch around somebody and then get to the pitcher spot. And you know, when you're in the American League, you got to go after everybody and try and find ways to, you know, to get guys out. It's a little bit different. You know, I'll probably have to make an adjustment there, but the preparation is going to be the same. You know, you just got to prepare with every hitter, go over the hitters with the pitcher, and just, you know, it's always a chess match, you know, between the pitchers and myself calling the game and the hitter. So
how was the manager player relationship with Joe Torre once he got to LA?
It was good. I mean, he gets automatic recognition and respect from all the players just because of, you know, everything that he's accomplished as a manager, and you know, and because, you know, you get respect from winning, and mm-hmm. you know, everybody respects that man for that. And also, you know, getting to know him, he's just a class act, you know, all the way around. He treats everybody with respect. He's just, you know, he's almost has like that father feeling to him, you know, where you can talk to him about anything, and you know, he really cares about his players. So I have tremendous respect for that man, No, we'll wish him well. I haven't talked to him in a little while, but I wish him well in whatever else he wants to do.
Russell Martin, our guest here January 15th. That's this Saturday at the Northern Lights Ballroom at the Renaissance Hotel at the Rogers Centre in Toronto. We'll tell you more about how you can fill that out with Baseball Canada in just a little bit. Who were most of your favorite players growing up? I don't want to say Yankees, but were they sort of iconic players? Did you have a partiality to Canadian players? We look at you, Russell, and we look at Joey Votto right now and think maybe it was Larry Walker for you. Maybe there were other guys that jumped out and gave you inspiration. Because right now, what I hear and what I see, and you know this, is guys like you and guys like Joey are, it's pretty inspiring for young Canadians who grew up thinking, well, I'll have to play hockey because Canadians can't make the Major League Baseball ranks.
Well, growing up, my favorite players were, I had, you know, Ken Griffey, which I got to play against, was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Ozzie Smith was one of my favorites just because, you know, what he did defensively. And as a kid growing up, I was a shortstop. I always thought I'd be a shortstop. But, you know, he was always fun to watch. Go out onto the field and then do his backflips and stuff. I always thought that was amazing. Larry Walker was a player that I really admired. And as far as hockey goes, I never was a really good hockey player. So I knew at an early age that I had a lot more talent in baseball than hockey. So, you know, I wasn't going to beat myself up trying to be a hockey player when there's tons of guys that are better than me, you know. So.
There was a lot of, out there, just to clarify, the other AL East team seemed quite interested in you and adding you. The Red Sox were in the mix. Did the Blue Jays make an approach? Was it something where the Yankee scenario just was a better fit for you, or did the Blue Jays back off? How did you read it?
The Yankees were just, you know, pretty aggressive in how they wanted me. And you know, and then it really came down to, you know, my decision and where I wanted to be and where I thought I, you know, I had the best chance of winning, you know, and getting that championship, because that's really, you know, what I want to go after is a championship. The Blue Jays got a good team, you know, they got a good young pitching staff and they're going to be a tough team to play against, but just, you know, I thought the Yankees were a good fit, you know, still, like, distance wise from where I'm from, Montreal, it's about the same, you know, I wanted to be close to home. But the Yankees, you know, it was just hard to turn it down.
I want to say you've played at the Rogers Center already, though, in Interleague, where the Dodgers were here at some point with you, weren't they?
Yeah. I don't remember if it was, I think it was 2007 or 2006.
Yeah.
I played there. I mean, I had a good series, too. I mean, I enjoyed playing there. So, you know, I definitely, you know, that came to my mind, you know, the success that I had there. I had some good memories. And also, I mean, I watched the Blue Jays growing up and stuff too. And another player was Roberto Alomar, who just got inducted into the Hall of Fame. I mean, he was one of my all-time favorites as well. So it was a tough decision.
Well, and World Baseball Classic, you were here as well. So what a rush. You're in this division now. Home games at Yankee Stadium, road games at Camden Yards, great park there as well, here and Fenway Park. So you can't have much more fun and intensity than that, can you?
Not really. The East, the American League East, is going to be probably the toughest division in baseball, I think. You know, just with all the additions they've had. The Orioles, even the Orioles have kind of revamped their whole infield, and you know, they're going to be tougher now. I mean, everybody knows, like, the Red Sox, they got Adrian Gonzalez now and Crawford, and, you know, they got those Big Poppy, you know, they got some really good left-handed hitters in that lineup, and that's some Pedroia. I mean, you know, the list goes on and on. And then you have the Tampa Bay Rays, you can't ignore. So it's going to be an intense summer for me.
It's funny you mentioned that, because they just put out the ESPN, Russell just put out the Sunday Night Baseball schedule, and they've got you guys on April 15th at Fenway and May 10th. So those Sunday night games between the Yankees and the Red Sox, you probably were sitting there on the West Coast a few times thinking, these are long games, and for a catcher, I mean, they're taking 4.5 hours, but that's how big they are.
Yeah, no, those games, the intensity and the coverage is pretty incredible. But, I mean, we had a lot of guys that came from the Yankee organization that were on the Dodgers, so they were stuck in front of the TV, you know, before our games, and that's what we had on our TV. It seemed like, you know, they were cut the cord. They were still, you know, watching the Yankees play the Red Sox, and a lot of guys were bitter about that, but, you know, it just it's fun to watch. It's good baseball, you know. The fans get into it, and it kind of just rubs off on the players as well.
Hey, Russell, thanks so much for doing this today. Have a good weekend at this event. I'm going to tell folks how to end up getting there. And I think you're pretty safe. You're going to get quite an ovation at the Rogers Center. Canadian baseball fans recognize what you've accomplished, what you've done for Baseball Canada as well. You won't get the same reception in Fenway, but I know you're ready for that. So
I think I'll be okay.
Thanks for doing this today.
All right, thanks, guys.
There's Russell Martin joining us, New York Yankees catcher. Great to have him on. So Saturday, January 15th, log on to Baseball Canada's website. There will be a link there, and you can go to the National Teams Award Banquet and Fundraiser. Cocktail hour, formal dinner, awards presentation, and auction. It's $400 a person, $4,000 for a table of 10 people. So it's Baseball Canada celebrating their achievements on the international stage, and a lot of former and current national team members there. Russell Martin is one such person. But before we get out of here, some, you know, shocking news. There's a new Jenny Craig spokesperson. Is it just because if it was John Craig, would men be allowed to do this? Yeah, I mean, I went on Nutrisystem after I had a knee surgery only because Dan Marino did the commercials. All right. No, it's not Jabba the Hutt. It's someone who was his adversary in Return of the Jedi. Carrie Fisher's the newest Jenny Craig spokesperson. She clocked in during the filming of Empire Strikes Back at 105 pounds. That's unhealthy. She's 5'1". She's now 180 pounds. That's more unhealthy. Carrie Fisher weighs in. I look on the internet. I had to do this. I was in denial. I look on the internet and they say, whatever happened to Carrie Fisher? She used to be so hot and now she looks like Elton John. Two things on that. I'm not sure who's saying that you used to be so hot, and no offense, none taken. Secondly, I would, buy the DVD of Elton John's outtakes during a Jenny Craig ad. If Elton John did the Jenny Craig commercials, I'd be very, very happy. I'd want to see all the outtakes. Anyway, when they recast Star Wars, surely they'll upgrade this. You need a Carrie Fisher upgrade. I thought that when I was six. I thought, she's not pretty. She just looks that way. I went Northern Pikes on them. I really didn't think. I think, Heather Thomas would have been an ideal. Carrie Fisher's asking for too much money. Who are we going to get? Get the blonde girl from The Fall Guy. Put her in Return of the Jedi. Yeah, you know what? She's also kidnapped by Jabba the Hutt and she gets to wear this bikini. Even better. Do it anyway. Cut Fisher out of the mix. Cut bait. I mean, literally. Chun. Is that not Connie Chung? All right, 3 o'clock's here. I've said too much. Canadian Standard Broadcast Council will be in touch. Blue and White tonight at 6 with Gord Stellick. Primetime Sports with Jeff Blair is coming up soon. You can't have it soon enough. And tomorrow on the program, Damon Allen will be in studio. I do want to talk about Martin Luther King Day, and ESPN's doing major special this weekend on the image of the black athlete. I want to tackle that here as well. So obviously one of the great quarterbacks of all time in the CFL and certainly in Argos history, Damon Allen will join us. We'll talk to Paul Jones. We'll talk to Jason Whitlock. We're going to talk to more than a few people tomorrow about this in our 2 o'clock hour. So do stay tuned for that. Thanks to Josh. Thanks to Lance. Thanks to Ryan. Thanks to Russell Martin for joining us on the program. Buddy Nix and Don Murray from the Sports Business Journal. All those interviews archived soon to be on fan590.com. Jeff's next, in for Bob McCown. Sports update coming up next. We'll see you tomorrow at noon for Hockey Central. Have a good night.